Grizzlies Suns tonight. We'll talk about what should be an easy win at FedEx Forum. Also, we'll open up the old mailbag. Some good questions coming from you. We will answer them when, by we, I mean me. Also, you'll hear from Marc Gasol. Some interesting comments from Marc as I talked with him about his role on the defensive side of the ball and some of the things that he looks for. All of that is on the way. You are Locked On Grizzlies.
Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi there, everybody. My name is Peter Edmiston, host of Locked On Grizzlies. Welcome in to the Wednesday Hump Day edition of the podcast. I hope you are doing well. Thank you for downloading the podcast. Thank you for those of you who subscribe. That is awesome. I appreciate that. Those of you that have left reviews, that is even better. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for all of that. If you haven't subscribed or left a review or anything like that, why not go ahead and do that now? Coming up, as I mentioned, a busy pod. We've got to preview what should be a simple enough game against the Phoenix Suns tonight. We will we'll certainly do that. Also, got the mailbag to open up. Yes, indeed, we're going to answer your questions. Still hoping later on in the week to be able to do, and we had talked about last week, and just because of the way that things worked out, couldn't get to it. But I still want to do that, the deep dive to check in on what the numbers are for the Grizzlies up and down the offensive ranks to see where they rank synergy-wise on all the different sets that they run, all that stuff. So we'll do that hopefully on Friday's pod, maybe part of the Warriors preview, possibly. I don't know. We may do that early next week, but it will happen. So those of you that have asked me, it's going to happen. I promise you. I appreciate that. We'll make it work. But coming up right here out of the gate, no injuries for the Grizzlies going into tonight's game. Grizzlies did practice on Tuesday, so good news there. But we've talked a lot about the sort of the way that this team has changed a little bit, how they've gone from all defense, no offense, to a big stretch of mostly all offense with not all that much defense. And, you know, Marc Gasol has kind of been the embodiment of some of that because he's kind of gone in that same direction himself, where he's had terrific offensive performances, but maybe not the best defense. And he's had terrific defensive performances that, you know, have led to him not being especially aggressive on offense. So I talked to Marc a little bit about some of the philosophies, things that he looks for, and just in general, his role defensively, what he wants to see and when he thinks he's effective. And I thought you guys would find it especially interesting to hear kind of what he's looking for out there. And it starts with him being able to talk to his teammates. So I kind of asked to start the conversation off with Marc. I asked him a little bit about his role in communicating as the defense starts to take shape as a play begins.
I'm normally the one communicating, so trust me, I yell the coverage as soon as I see it. So it's a lot of times it's trusting the call and being up in the ball and being proactive defensively and not letting them lead the dance. You got to be, you know, aggressive defensively to a point where you feel that you have the edge instead of them leading, you leading them to where you want to. So, you know, obviously there's different players. Tony Parker's not the same as Russell Westbrook. But, you know, you've got to be consistent because that set the whole team behind you.
So when you're talking about being aggressive like that, I mean, does it come more with the comfort or the fact that, you know, in terms of personnel grouping or, you know,
it's the trust. I think it's the trust first in yourself and the trust on the call and trust that your guy is going to be there. So you want consistency from first, obviously from us. You want to be up on the ball, pressuring. And that tells me where the ball has a pretty good chance of going. So I'm able to read what's going to happen when the guy only has, you know, one and a half way to go instead of having, you know, two ways to go and a lot of space, because they can read. You know, there's good players like Russell or James or Lillard. They, you know, once they see a body off, you know, they can read a lot easier what's going to happen ahead too, because they practice on those kind of stuff. So, you know, we got to make the call early so they can get into the ball and force them to where we want to force them.
So then, I mean, when you were able to make that call early, that makes the difference in everything. When you can see it before
correct,
it happens.
That's essentially it. And I'm able to pull, you know, once I make my move, and commit to one side. I'm pulling people with me. So you know, when you have way on the defense, that's the worst thing you can do, because that doesn't pull anybody. You're just retreating. You're just reacting to what they're doing, and that puts you in a real bad spot. So you just at their mercy.
I thought that was really interesting stuff from Mark, talking a little bit about his philosophy and what he does defensively. It kind of explains why some of the things that he does are harder to recognize. He's not a guy that's going to have a million block shots or anything like that. But you know, if he can make that call, as he talks about specifically what he sees in what they're trying to do, and then he talks about, you know, making sure that the weight of the play is coming from his side, from the defensive side, pushing on the offense rather than the other way around, that, you know, he's limiting the options. You know, he said giving these guys, you know, one and a half ways to go rather than two ways to go. And, you know, it's funny to speak of it like that in those sorts of limiting terms. But yeah, if you take a guy like Russell Westbrook, you're never going to be able to eliminate everything that he can do. But if you can take a half an option away, that helps, you know, stack the deck a little more in your favor defensively. And you can hear what he talks about when he talks about trust, because he's got to have the trust that once that call is made, everyone is moving in the same direction to push the pressure and to make sure that the team is, you know, all working kind of to make it harder for the opponent and to know what they're doing, not just doing that randomly, as he says, not just to react to what they're doing, but rather to be proactive and to try to force them into certain situations. So, you know, that's where, to me, and this is just, you know, this is where it gets into the speculative armchair psychology. And I talked to Mark off mic about a lot of stuff. And, you know, it's some of the things that we discussed, I was kind of asking him, like, well, how do you, you know, he always like kind of bristles when people talk about, you know, certain evaluations or certain, you know, ways of doing this. He's like, why are you always worried about why this is happening? You know, that sort of thing. So I asked him, like, how do you tell when you have a good game if you don't use these kinds of evaluations? What's your evaluation? How do you know? And he's like, well, you just kind of know. He said, it's different for me. And he didn't get into any of the specifics of that, though I pried as best I could. But, you know, he did say that he didn't concede and say that, yeah, you know, there is a push and a pull between offense and defense. But, you know, he was just kind of like, okay, I can kind of see, yeah. And he just was sort of nodding his head and just kind of saying, okay. Personally, this is the where it's, you know, it's speculative, and no one will admit it. No one could even know. You probably, you know, it wouldn't, admitting it is not even the right term for it, because you wouldn't know. But I think when you think about what he's doing mentally to set up these defensive sets, and then to kind of on the offensive end, if you mentally have to like force yourself, or you're thinking like, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I want to be aggressive, I want to make sure I'm, you know, focused in on whatever it is, I think mentally there's only so much you can do. I mean, there's certainly an energy level that you can exert, but I think also mentally there's only so much you can give, and you start to see some erosion on one side or the other. So finding that balance is not just true for the Grizzlies, but for Mark specifically. That's where these next few games are going to be really intriguing. And I thought San Antonio, that game was a step in the right direction, you know, for that reason, because it was kind of getting back to basics to some extent for the Grizzlies defensively. And, you know, I think showing that they can still do that and they can still call on that for a longer stretch of time. Yeah, it was against a, you know, limited team. And, yeah, you're talking about, you know, San Antonio without Kawhi and Powell and all that. But still, these are steps in the right direction, because that hasn't always been the case for the Grizzlies, even against, you know, limited teams. So, you know, finding that pendulum is swinging back and forth. And when you can find it, when it finally settles down, and finding that little middle ground to take a lot of the offensive things that you've done really well over the last 6 weeks to try to fold those into a defensive set that's much more like the team in November rather than the one in January, then that's a team that's dangerous, really dangerous, in the postseason. So keep an eye on that. And I think tonight, even against Phoenix, just being fundamentally sound and focused on this game is going to be important, because the one thing Phoenix can do is they can kill you with those guards. They can, you know, they have guys that can shoot. They also have guys that, you know, if you get them down 10, 15, 20 points, then they will give up. They're not that interested in coming back. But if you, you know, mess around and keep them in the game, they get hot, they can make shots. So this will be a good test of their focus, if nothing else, against the Suns tonight. Speaking of which, if you're looking for tickets tonight or any other night, I am thrilled to tell you about our friends at SeatGeek. Man, they make it so easy. Everything in life's hard. Everything's life's tough. Sometimes it's confusing to do this, do that, you know, and especially when you're trying to find deals for sporting events or concerts, stuff like that. You're like, okay, look, let me go to this site, let me go to that site, let me go check here, let me check there. It becomes a pain in your time, like your time's worth money. And in this case, SeatGeek can save you time and save you money. What? That's crazy, but it happens. It happens so easily. Here's what you do. Get the app. Just download the SeatGeek app right out of the gate. Look, I got it on my phone. You can get it on your iPhone, Android, whatever. It's easy. Go to the App Store, search for SeatGeek, download it, bing, bam, and you insert, concert or game you want to go to, just search for it. Boom, you'll see the seating chart. You'll see a very cool proprietary system that they've got that aggregates across all of the major deal sites out there. So you know what these tickets are going for on the market, and you know that if you can find the price, it's great. It'll be green. It'll be right there. You can look at it visually. Boom, this is a great deal. Go get it. And if it's not, then you can wait and find a different one or find a place. You'll know. You'll have peace of mind to know that you're getting a great deal. It's super easy. You can do it all in that app or on their website. It makes it so, so simple. And not only are they doing all that price comparison for you, I'll save you some money in the process. They're going to get you the most bang for your buck, and I'm going to get you a little extra bang for your buck. How about that? My listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase just by doing this. You download the SeatGeek app, you go to the settings tab, click add a promo code, enter promo code LO Grizzlies. That's LO Grizzlies. You do that, you make your first ticket purchase, SeatGeek will send you $20. That's that simple. You're helping the podcast, you're helping me, and you are helping yourself save $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Again, download the SeatGeek app, go to settings, click add a promo code, type in LO Grizzlies, and then after you make your first ticket purchase, SeatGeek will send you $20. It's that simple. But everything with SeatGeek is simple. It's a simple way for you to save a lot of money and get the best seats at the best price for the best events, period. It's SeatGeek, promo code LO Grizzlies. Mailbag time. Yeah. Woo! We're doing it. We are doing it. Opening up the old mailbag. And we're going to look inside. We're going to see what you got. I put out the clarion call. I said, hey, I'm answering some questions if you guys have any. And you guys had some, a lot. I appreciate it. Thank you. And I have taken quite a few of them, and we are going to get into them. Some of them are more straightforward than others. Some of them are intriguing, very intriguing. So you guys, listen, I've always said, you guys are fabulous listeners. Great. You always have awesome things to add. You always, whenever I ask for any kind of creative stuff, you guys blow me away. You guys are super well informed. So I applaud you. I appreciate you. Thank you for being such a huge part of it. And you guys enhance it in a major, major way. So thank you for that. Now let's get to the questions. First of all, I'll start with the question that is the most straightforward of all of them, because it's just simply a factual question. Vic wants to know, he is at VGoodIn40. He says, where does current Grizz record stand in franchise history through 54 games? Love the pod. Daily listener. Great work. Thank you, Vic, for listening. Thank you for the compliment. That is the kind of question that we can pretty easily answer here, because it's pretty straightforward. This year, as you know, of course, the Grizzlies are 32-22 through the first 54 games of the season, 10 games over .500. That's a season best, by the way, 10 games over 500. But where does that rank historically after 54 games? Okay, Vic, so here you go. Last year, the Grizzlies were the exact same record, 32-22. And of course, I should point out, I was sort of remiss in not pointing it out earlier, but you'll have to forgive me. This represents actually February 8th, last year, the day that Marc Gasol broke his foot and sent the 2015-16 season reeling, and sent Marc on a many months of rehab and pain and all that sort of thing. So, you know, but the Grizzlies were in the exact same spot, 32-22, going into the 55th ball game. 2 years ago, the Grizzlies were 40-14. That is the season high. In case you were curious, that's the best mark that the Grizzlies have had after 54 games, 40-14. That was a run. That team 2 years ago really hit some tremendous highs before kind of, you know, fading out and basically playing 500 basketball over the final month, month and a half of the season. But they had a stretch of winning 12-13. Eight in a row. They were flying. They had some really, really good runs. 3 years ago, 31 wins out of their first 54, so 31-23. Then back in the Western Conference Finals year, 36-18 was the record. So, and you can go back, 31 wins 5 years ago, or 6 years ago, I guess it was. So, yeah, they've been actually roughly at this number or better, really. So this is kind of their, it's a little below the average. If you were to average the last 6 years out, this is actually a little bit below their average, but it's right around what you would expect from this team. So nothing especially unusual. This is kind of what they do. It's what they've done for most of their time in Memphis. Actually, if you take out, you know, you take the years that they were decent and made the playoffs, this is kind of where they were, 32-22, you know, somewhere in that neighborhood. After 54 games. So thank you again, Vic, for the question. Okay, next question goes to Jeremy. Jeremy, at Jeremy Bervets. Bervoets? Bervoets. B-E-R-V-O-E-T-S. Bervoets? Let's go with Bervoets. Maybe it's Bervets. I don't know. Anyway, thank you, Jeremy, for listening. At Jeremy Bervets on Twitter. He asks, what's the plan for Troy Daniels? Is the team okay with the minutes he's getting? Does any realistic trade create a bigger role for him? I think in terms of the last question, yes, absolutely. There are trades out there that could create bigger roles for him depending on what happens with the wings. I don't know, you know, realistic trades, that all depends. But, I mean, there are certainly guys in that mix that could get traded. You know, it's plausible that you could see one of the wings get moved, or even a guy like, I don't know, Harrison, Tony Allen, you know, Vince Carter in some scenarios. I mean, I'm not saying that's likely, but it's certainly plausible, and any of those would probably give more minutes for Daniels, Ennis, possibly. You know, it just depends on how it goes. You know, as far as the plan for Troy Daniels, if nothing happens, if there's no trade, then I think that you're seeing over the last few weeks what the plan is, which is that he's just not going to play much. And that really frustrates a lot of fans. I think it frustrates him, especially because of the role that he played early in the season and how much he was doing, how prolific he was from behind the three-point line. It's really been a strange year. It was a strange preseason for Daniels. The start of the season was awful. Then he just went insane, and now he's sort of anonymous. I think the plan is just to have him as an emergency shooter, a guy that can hopefully get hot quickly in the right and in certain matchups in certain situations. Then you'd use him, and you know that you're going to get a guy that can go out there and play. The defensive liabilities are real, but you know the team hasn't played the greatest defense over the last, you know, month or so. So the fact that he didn't play even in those lineups tells you. I don't think that Fizdale has ever gotten a good feel for Troy Daniels and for what to do with him. As far as the team being okay with it, I mean, I think they are okay with winning. I think they're okay with the whole situation. So I don't, it's not as if there are guys in the locker room that are freaking out about Troy Daniels' minutes. No one is doing that. I think long-term, this is probably what you're going to see for Troy, unless there is a trade that opens up a little time for him, or unless, you know, he himself is moved in some way, which I guess is also a possibility too. Question coming in from Jesse H at Grit Grind Airy Day. Grit Grind Airy Day, E-R-Y, Airy Day. Jesse, thank you for your question. Thanks for listening. He says, what is the Grizzlies' number one need before the playoffs, and what is the most likely / best trade to fill that need? Ah, I think the number one need in my mind is still backup point guard. That continues to be the case even with the short-term acquisition of Tony Douglas, who I think can certainly fill the gap for the foreseeable future. But if you really want to bump it up, if you really want to go after it, you really want to maximize your window, then I think you have to make a better push for a little upgrade in quality there with respect to Tony Douglas. And as far as a realistic trade, you know, there are many out there who are better at the trade machine than I am. But if I'm looking for, you know, plausible, possible deals, guys that would be available that I think would actually represent upgrades, then I would start there are the talks that Darren Collison is, you know, the Kings are looking to move him. He's in the last year of his deal. Now, he had that domestic battery situation. He was suspended for the first 8 games of the regular season due to that, which, you know, certainly is a blight on his record. In terms of his on-court performance, I think he would add, he would certainly upgrade the quality of the position. He's, I don't know that he's going to be an absolute, you know, game changer or anything like that, but he's better, quite a bit better than Tony Douglas, quite a bit better than Andrew Harrison in my mind. So you're talking about the better part of $6 million for him. You could make that work with a combination of lots of different smaller pieces for the Grizzlies, depending on what the Kings were looking for, if you wanted to try to make that happen. That would be one possibility. I think Tim Frazier from the Pelicans, now that Drew Holiday is back, and I mean, now he may be involved apparently in talks with this Jahlil Okafor trade that may or may not happen with the Sixers. I don't know, but if Tim Frazier is available, he's got 2 years left on his deal, about $2 million per, which, you know, is not big money these days. And I think he's a very solid guy, and would be, again, an upgrade over Tony Douglas or Andrew Harrison, and would not cost you a lot in order to make that happen. TJ McConnell is another guy that would be intriguing from the Sixers, who's, you know, kind of quietly, I guess, having a really productive year for a very interesting young team. Another guy that, you know, I don't know what the Sixers – this is where, like, it gets into – the difficult thing, because like I can sort of look at guys and say, okay, I think this guy would be a good fit. I think this guy would make some sense, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, trying to figure out what it is that the Sixers would want for him. I don't know. They reportedly rebuffed some interest that Cleveland had a few weeks back in McConnell, but I don't know what Cleveland would have offered. And, you know, I don't know, would they be interested in, you know, do they need another, how many young players? They've got a million guys between the ages of like 20 and 25. They don't need any more young players. So do you want to go? I don't know what you offer there. I don't know that, you know, anybody like a Jarrell Martin or something would in any way, shape or form interest to them. You know, any of your wings or anything like that. I don't know. So I don't know what the Sixers would be looking for, but I would certainly poke around him. I think, you know, guys in that sort of framework, that have been productive, and looking at these guys and their ability to pass in terms of, you know, synergy numbers, for example, if you want to look at, you know, around the league, possessions plus assists. So kind of a real tale of, you know, what you do, your points per possession plus your assists. So it kind of factors in your ability to pass the ball. And, you know, guys like McConnell and Frazier rate very highly in this stat. Collison does very well in that stat too, but those guys are like, you know, top 10 type guys. You could make a case, and you could go after them. You know, I don't know if you could get them, but it would make some sense to at least poke around. So to answer the question, and I hope I did in a roundabout way, Jesse, I would say certainly still backup point guard is the spot that I would look at. And I think there are upgrades out there. Again, you know, finding how the teams who you're dealing with, what they would want, all that stuff. That still is very much up in the air, but I think there are potential deals out there, small deals that would make you better in that regard. Question comes in from Alex at @A_Kagel1. Hello, Alex. He asks, how much will J Mike cost, and will he get too expensive for the Grizzlies? Yeah, we talked about this earlier with Matt Herdlicka of Grizzly Bear Blues, who does a lot of cap and trade stuff and that kind of thing. In looking at Jermichael's, and he wrote a piece a couple weeks ago that talked about some possibilities for his contract, which is definitely worth a read if you want to go dig that up and look at the value. I have said for a long time, in talking with folks around the league and just kind of canvassing as best I can, this year's market is going to be different than last year's. Last year's market got super heated up. Everyone had money. That rise, that huge influx of TV money, you know, everyone was spending. So, you know, everyone got paid. Anyone who was a free agent got paid. I don't know that there's going to be a direct correlation between this year's market and last year's market numbers wise, but I think what Jermichael has shown, and you saw it again in that game against Minnesota, where he flexed a little bit of the offensive muscle, but defensively he's been terrific for this team. I do think he's made himself more and more indispensable going forward. I think he will make $10 million plus a year, average annual value, however you want to, you know, make that thing work, depending on years and all that stuff. You know, I don't know. There are ways that you can structure contracts differently, but I think when all's said and done, his contract will end up being in the neighborhood of $10 to $12 million a year over a multi-year period, especially because he's a restricted free agent. I think there are teams that will want to test the Grizzlies' resolve. They can afford to keep him, but there will be, if that's the price, there will just be a knock-on effect about what you can pay or whether you can keep, you know, some of the other guys like Zach, Tony, Vince. You'll have to make some decisions on them. But yes, they could keep him, match him all the way up. They are not going to ever be a taxpayer in Memphis. They have no interest in doing that whatsoever, so forget about that. But they will happily go all the way up, right up to that line. And they won't go over it, but they'll go right up to that line. And you know, he will, if you sign to that kind of deal, you're going to get very, very close indeed. Parker wants to know, Parker Van Blaricom, at P Van Blaricom, says, which big man would you deal, considering return value to team, etc.? Brandon Wright, Jermichael Green, or Jarrell Martin? Good question, interesting question. And you know, this the Jermichael part of it goes back to if you just know you're not gonna bring him back, you're just not going, you don't have any interest, you're just not gonna do it, you don't want to even mess with it, then you would trade him. Otherwise, you don't mess with him. He's been a big part of the team and plays key roles, key minutes, all that stuff. I would not mess with him unless you are absolutely certain that you are not going to bring him back. And I can't imagine they would be that certain. So that leaves in your question Brandon Wright. And I agree, and I'm with you that, you know, they're not trading Deontay Davis. There's no reason for that. Brandon Wright or Jerome Martin, you know, I think Brandon Wright showed Monday some of the things that he can, and even Saturday, I guess, some of the things that he can give you on both ends of the floor when he's healthy. It was very exciting to see. His partnership with Mark was interesting. Everyone's talked about the theoretical partnership with Zach, although I think, you know, Brandon is better served with Mark, truthfully. But you can experiment with that. He's got the ability to dive the basket. He's an elite pick and roll big. He can block some shots. He's not going to be, you know, Vince Carter out there in terms of blocking shots, but he's a good shot blocker and a good defensive player. So yeah, I think he's starting to show you, you know, bringing him in at this point in time is, you know, he's almost like a mid-season acquisition trade wise or something like that. You haven't had access to him, and now you do, and he looks pretty good. So I would say Jerome Martin for me is definitely the guy that I would be putting out there, because honestly, I don't know what Jarrell's future, what his role is. What is he going to do? You know, what is he actually, what position is he going to play? You know, what is the plan there? I don't know. You know, I don't know where he gets the minutes long term. I don't know. I don't think he's progressing, especially as a player. It doesn't seem to me that he's, you know, doing much in that regard. I think if you can find a team that considers him full of potential and wants to take a chance on him and wants to get younger, if you could find a team that maybe is perhaps bereft of first-round picks and wants to get younger players, you know, it would be nice if Brooklyn had something, a combination that would be worth exploring, because I think they would be a team that would be interested in that guy, just because, you know, they have no firsts for a while, and you know, no chance, no good access to young talent other than through this sort of thing. So if you throw them a guy like Jarrell, then he would interest him greatly, I would imagine. So yeah, I don't know what you could do there, but I think that would be worth poking around for a team like that. Not necessarily them, but a team like that. So if you're asking me who would I trade, I would trade Jerome Martin, would be first on my list of guys that I'd be like looking around the league and trying to figure out. Last question goes to Jonathan Lindsay at StumpBuster9, who says, should the Grizzlies tank/rest to get to 7th in the Western Conference to play the Spurs in a very winnable series, thereby avoiding Golden State until the Western Conference Finals? It's an interesting question, Jonathan, and it's one that you guys, the lots of you on Twitter, went back and forth on and debated. I think it's a great debate to have. And, you know, as far as I'm never a big proponent, especially when things are as close as they are this year. I think sometimes if you get too cute with your tanking and resting, you end up kind of messing with the mojo of your team a little bit. Guys tend to not like that very much competitively. They don't tend to enjoy it, even if they academically understand why they're doing it. It just tends to kind of, I don't know, it's a weird, it creates a weird vibe in my experience. So you have to be very sure that you're doing it and it's absolutely the right thing to do. I'm not sure I buy the idea that San Antonio is a very winnable series either. I don't buy that. I think the Grizzlies match up fine against the Spurs, but you know, they are such a well-prepared group. They have such good ball movement. I think personnel-wise, they're not as dangerous as Houston with the spread pick and roll and James Harden and all that. I think Houston's personnel is more dangerous, but I would not classify the Spurs. I would not. This is not back to that Spurs series back in 2011 when Antonio McDyess was starting at the four and Zach just completely destroyed him. This is not that. Yeah, I think with respect to what happened Monday, you know, that I think that's one thing, but full strength, Kawhi, I would be a little bit nervous about that. The matchup that I think to me is I like the Utah matchup. And as far as the Golden State issue too in the Western Conference Finals or trying to look ahead to what you would play in the second round, I mean, I think the Grizzlies, based on the way they play, will not fear and will not have a problem with and will not really even, in terms of a matchup, have too much fear of anyone. You've seen them play really well against good teams throughout this year. They've played poorly some of those games, too. They've played poorly against bad teams. But they have the ability, when they want to, defensively, to match up pretty well with just about anyone. The matchup that I think would be good is, I mean, I would be fine with Utah. I think Utah fits them well, even though Utah's talented and deep and all that. I just think the personnel groupings match up really well. Apart from the first game of the year, the Grizzlies have had good success against Rudy Gobert, more so than many other teams in the league. Zach even tends to get into his body a little bit and force him to not be able to use that length to any kind of major advantage. Mark is very crafty and was much better in games 2 and 3 against Gobert. I think the point guard matchup is a good one for the Grizzlies there. Gordon Hayward's dangerous, but I think he's certainly, you have the ability to shut him down more so than the other wing guys that would be in the other matchups that you're talking about, whether it's Kawhi or Durant or Curry or, you know, whoever. So I like that Utah matchup, and I would, in lieu of trying anything else, I would hope maybe you can catch a break. Maybe you can push ahead enough of the Clippers. Maybe Chris Paul stays out long enough to really damage them. You know, maybe you can glide forward. The Grizzlies' schedule, it has been pretty easy of late and will continue to be pretty easy for the foreseeable future. There are a lot of winnable games coming up for the Grizzlies. They are in catching momentum at a good time right now. And, you know, starting tonight, tonight's a very winnable matchup. So, yeah, I think in theory, I'm not a proponent of the tanking to go after San Antonio to avoid Houston and even especially to worry about what's happening in the second round. I think in the West, you know, this year, like a lot of years, yeah, the matchups are going to be important, but you know ultimately you're going to have to go through, you know, either or both of San Antonio or Golden State if you're going to win anything. So it's just you've got to do it. Does it make it any better that you do it in the second round as opposed to the finals? Maybe a little, but not enough to me to sacrifice and to justify trying to tank and introducing a weird element into the mix and potentially opening yourself up to what I think is still a pretty vulnerable matchup with San Antonio. But it's a tricky question, and I'm open to the counter-argument on that. That is just my take on it. Great stuff. Thank you again for all the questions that you guys submitted. I appreciate it, and I want to do it on a more regular basis. So you guys remind me. Feel free to shoot me questions, too. Even if I don't ask, you got something that you want to throw out there on the pod, please feel free. Hit me up on Twitter especially. That's the easiest way to do it. You can email me, peter@peteredmiston.com, but just @PeterEdmiston on Twitter is the easiest, quickest way to get in touch, and we can go from there. So very good stuff from all of you guys. Thank you again for that. Thanks so much for joining me here on Locked On Grizzlies. As always, you can check me out 7 to 10, Wolo and Peter in the morning, Real Sports Talk, Sports 56, 87.7 FM. Check out Numbers Game in the Commercial Appeal. And you can check us out on Facebook as well. Search for Locked On Grizzlies or go to facebook.com/LockedOnGrizzlies. For those of you, of course, that are big fans of the podcast, let me tell you something. This is a great spot for your company. If you want to reach men between the ages of 18 and 54, this is the place for your audiences. And here's something to consider. Recent surveys have shown that podcast listeners are 65% more willing to think seriously about purchasing products they learned about from podcasts. 60% given equal price and quality, prefer to purchase from companies that advertise on their favorite podcasts. Our rates are very reasonable. Please shoot me an email, peter@peteredmiston.com. Shoot me a tweet @peteredmiston or a direct message, something like that. We can get all the information out to you. I'd love to have you on the podcast, become part of our family, and reach all those great folks out there that are listening. Thank you so much. You have been Locked On Grizzlies.
Locked On Grizzlies, your daily podcast on the Memphis Grizzlies, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.